following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wait a minute. Do you still think politics is boring? Well, not when you can say fun words like caucus. Yes, it's fun words like caucus and more. With the intellectual, intersexual, and intersectional. Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
Democrats, don't panic, we're gonna be fine. Though pundits go manic and direly opine, at 14 months out, just ignore some dumb poll. Incumbents have won on the whole. The economy is humming and job growth has sprouted. Even jerks who voted against infrastructure are bragging about it. Abortion boosts turnout, which has been apparent, while the orange guy gets even more incoherent. So Democrats, don't panic about 2024. Yes, things feel volcanic, but we've been here before, and things worked out time and again, as we've seen. Well, except that one time in 2016. Now that was a shock that was most unexpected, but as an incumbent, he was not re-elected. Sure, some of his fans stick to him without fail, but they won't be doing much voting from jail. So don't sweat or squirm, folks. The odds are quite teeny of a second term for the Mango Mussolini. I know fretting and worrying is in our DNA, but Trump's legal woes aren't going away. As more evidence comes out every day, and more witnesses will flip, safe to say. So if hope there is more than a ray, relax, it'll all be okay.
I hope. It says I hope.
That these videos don't produce themselves, but you can help me by joining the Patreon member for as little as $2 a month. You can help me continue to make videos that help you laugh and use whatever I think you cry. Thanks.
Thanks, Lauren Mayer, everybody. And yes, she does deserve a round of applause. She knocks out one of those new songs every week. And you can find her on YouTube and all the social medias. I know on the shitter, she's at Lauren's Comedy. And she said that little ditty was inspired by our friend Digby, who was here just a couple of days ago. So, yeah. All right. Wow. So today it's the end of a busy week with a lot of legal stuff. And you know what I do when there's a lot of legal questions. Yeah, we call our friend Lisa Graves, and she'll be along in just a few minutes. Lisa Graves, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General under two presidents. That would be Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush, I believe. She was there under Janet Reno and John Ashcroft, of all people. And since then, she's, you know, she works her ass off. She exposes dark money. I hate to call them people, but, you know, the creatures that I'm talking about, like Leonard Leo and the Koch brothers and Alec, all the machinations of Alec in sticking their nose, American Legislative Exchange Council nonsense that is just a way to get, you know, basically lobbyists, big dark money people to write laws that are sort of generic that they give to state legislators to bring home to their state assemblies and slap their names on. Things like, you know, here in Florida, the approval of materials from the entity known as PragerU. That U stands for, I got to come up with a good unrealistic, unfactual. Yeah, I'll have to give it more thought. I just honestly thought I'd brilliantly come up with something off the top of my head, which didn't happen this time. But you get the idea, right? So that's going on. But in that song, Lauren Mayer did say something about ridiculous polls 14 months out. Okay. Now, you may have listened yesterday when Howie Klein was here, and I mentioned that I had read something about that polling that CNN has gotten. They've just gone nonstop on. In fact, somebody, I didn't pull the clip because I'm not going to amplify all the attacks on Joe Biden, but CNN has gone nonstop in dissing the president because of the results of this poll that they conducted. Well, and I said to Howie that I had read somewhere yesterday, Prager uneducated. Good one. Good one, Caroline in the chat room. Disinformation University. You guys are creative. I love you guys. Yeah, keep them coming. Anyway, this CNN poll, I had mentioned that I read somewhere that it was very skewed to the right. And Howie's like, where'd you see that? I couldn't remember because, you know, I read so many different things each day, but I found it. I found it last night. And somebody named Norman Ornstein, who is an old-time Politico on the progressive side of the aisle, retweeted something from this guy, Chris D. Jackson. Let's see who Chris D. Jackson is. He is, he's a dad, a husband, a public servant, 16 years, elective office, former Democratic Party chair, OG Team Joe, our animal advocate. Okay. ChrisDJackson.com. Anyway, Chris Jackson tweeted, CNN desperately wanted an anti-Biden narrative. So what did they do? They commissioned a poll. Again, the poll that you've heard nonstop about for the last 48 hours or so, comprised of 59.7% Republicans, to generate a predictably bad outcome for Biden, and have now blabbed about it nonstop all day. He writes, you literally can't make this shit up. They are literally making their own news. And then he quotes something from CNN that says, the CNN poll was conducted by SSRS from August 25th through 31st among a random national sample of 1,503 adults drawn from a probability-based panel, including 1,259 registered voters and 391 Democratic and Democratic-leaning independent voters. The survey included an oversample to reach a total of 898 Republicans and Republican-leaning independents. This group has been weighted to its proper size within the population. Surveys were either conducted online or by telephone with a live interviewer. Results among the full sample have a margin of sampling error of plus or minus 3.5 points. Among registered voters, the margin of sampling error is 3.6 votes, and it's 6.0 for Democratic and Democratic-leaning voters. Okay, it's mumbo jumbo to me. It may as well be talking Greek because I don't know statistics and this kind of stuff. It's numbles that jumble up in my head. But I've read now in more than a few places that they commissioned a poll with a majority of 59.7 Republicans, percent Republicans. So I will have to ask Lisa Graves about this. And again, CNN is running with these headlines. America's frustration with Biden could set Trump up to win back the White House in 2024. Another one, CNN poll. Biden faces negative job ratings and concerns about his age as he gears up for 2024. What about the former guy? He's a whopping 3 years younger than Biden. At that age, I'm sorry, there's no difference. But this is the least of our worries today. We've got a lot going on and so many questions. So I'm thrilled. Hold on. I have Marcy Wheeler still up here. I got to get Marcy Wheeler off there and put here. Let me get I'm all confused here. Hold on one second, Lisa Graves. I'm coming. Let's get Lisa Graves here, and then I'll fix the Chiron for us. Lisa Graves joins us. She is the executive director of a wonderful organization called True North Research. They're at truenorthresearch.org. However, when Lisa joins us as our legal expert here on the show, she joins us as in her personal capacity as a private citizen, not as her in her capacity as executive director of True North Research.
Lisa.
Whoops. And I got a, oh my goodness. It's Friday. I've been doing 25 things at once. And okay. Now, Lisa, hi.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being here. You know, we're moving. We're now like a week away. The pod gets delivered next Friday. So in addition to doing or trying to do my show each day and packing and purging and trying to put together like 3 weeks worth of best of shows to air while I'm gone, I've been going nonstop. So I'm a bit sort of scattered, but thank you so much for being here. As always, I can't thank you enough. I'm getting your live. There we are. Okay. Now we get the Chiron up. We get the live shot up. There's Lisa Graves. So, oh my God, this has been like the busiest legal week ever.
It's been busy, but it's also been one of those 1,000 flowers of justice blooming, it seems, in some ways, some accountability at long last on some of these bad guys.
Well, accountability, I guess we can start with yesterday's very quick. I mean, they chose a jury. They had the trial. The jury deliberated and Peter Navarro was convicted on two counts of contempt of Congress for defying a congressional subpoena. This is all his own doing, isn't it?
It is. And it's almost the definition of an open and shut case. You know, it was very straightforward. The facts were very straightforward. The law is very straightforward. And I would say he both, you know, is guilty of contempt and is contemptuous and has continuously behaved contemptuously, thinking that he's got impunity because of the former guy or TFG, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know. And even his, you know, when he went out and they had the little press conference after his guilty verdict. Now, they don't sentence him until January. Is that normal?
Usually there is a delay for sentencing because there's a sort of a pre-sentence investigation or PSI in some jurisdictions where there's a recommendation of the possible sentence that's both from the prosecutor, the prosecutor's perspective, the defense weighs in on their view of what the sentence should be, which, you know, I'm sure they're going to say nothing or near nothing or suspended. But usually when someone is sentenced, if there were a criminal background or other factors, those would also be assessed if there were mitigating factors, for example. But I personally see no mitigating factors here other than that he hasn't been convicted previously of this particular offense. But I hope that he gets the strongest possible sentence because he certainly deserves it, in my view.
So the strongest possible sentence, I understand it's like a year on each count. So that would be 2 years.
Yeah. You know, the right likes to claim that they're law and order judges when they're not actually. They're, you know, very politicized. But if you were a law and order judge, you'd do the max sentence and have it served consecutively along with the max fine. But, you know, that doesn't always happen. Often the sentences are served concurrently, that sort of thing. So we'll see. But I hope he serves some time behind bars. He certainly deserves it.
Some of these people really should. And maybe it's once we see them get behind bars that others may start saying, oh, shit, that could very well happen to me. I'd better start cooperating here. And I guess that's part of the process. Donald Trump, the former guy, has 91 felony counts against him. He's got four separate indictments that comprise these 91 felony counts. His trial calendar is booked up. His dance card is booked up for the next couple of years, and he's running for president. Do you, Lisa? Do you think that if he didn't have these arrests and these trials coming up and the potential to spend the rest of his life in prison, that he would be running for the presidency again?
Well, I certainly think that his desire to pardon himself is a motivating factor. But the other motivating factor that is a perennial factor for Trump is the money. And even though we haven't been able to trace money to him directly in terms of self-enrichment, this has been a major money-making scheme for his compatriots in terms of all his folks around him getting, or not all of them, but like a lot of people, certainly some law firms getting money to defend him. So it's like this cycle of cash, which is why I have called basically since the beginning, the big lie, the big lucrative lie, because raising a lot of money to basically continue to fuel the Trump publicity machine. And in the Trump publicity machine, no negative publicity is not negative. It's all publicity. And so it just is a self-generating process for him to continue to generate cash from basically nothing but controversy, which is probably the easiest money he's ever raised or made in his life. Not that selling his brand took a lot of effort necessarily, but like this doesn't even involve having real assets that you've got to worry about in terms of a building or something. This is just money in every time you hit the false anger button, like, yeah, and then money comes in, and then you lie some more, and then money comes in, and like this is his scheme. It's just right. Constantly trying to raise money based on lying to people.
And this being opposite world, you know, he's got these lemmings who follow him, who believe the fantasy that Mark Burnett put on television of this billionaire in Manhattan, who was actually, when The Apprentice came on the air, was under multiple bankruptcies. He was broke. And they created this character around the myth of Donald Trump and the image that he tried to portray of himself. And, you know, the dumbing down of America, a wide swath of it believes him and thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And you just wonder, like, what is missing? How do they not see that this is like the biggest con man to ever, you know, con the country? I wrestle with that every day, but it underscores why they're doing what they're doing in the schools.
Well, you know, it's interesting because one of the facts that a lot of folks don't know, and I know you know this, Nicole, is that, you know, Trump had been sort of threatening to run for the president for years in the 90s, was threatening, and in the early 2000s had thought about running on the National Reform Party ticket for president. And Mark Burnett has also his own political sort of fundamentalist agenda, notwithstanding, you know, his other franchises like Survivor, which have, you know, done quite well, are, you know, seemingly neutral. But his other operations have been to basically try to prop up these sort of empty suit celebrities, you know, in their political ambitions, including not just Donald Trump, but Sarah Palin, after she, you know, just absolutely failed in her role as the vice presidential candidate, was just, you know, so obviously abysmally uninformed, uneducated, uninterested, and a liar. After she lost, you know, helped McCain lose that bid that Obama won in 2008, here comes Mark Burnett with a sweet deal for her to basically further enrich her and polish her celebrity for future runs. Because, you know, people like some of these right wing operatives, and that's what I consider Mark Burnett to be, again, notwithstanding my, occasional watching of Survivor.
I used to watch it. I really don't anymore. But for the first 15 years, I was there. Yeah.
I got you. But in his other job, not as an executive producer over there or the creator, helped create that franchise. He's someone who has a very right wing agenda and has supported extremist right-wing politicians like Trump and Palin in trying to basically use their celebrity to gain a political foothold. And in my personal view, have people who are pliable to advance an agenda just based on their own desire for power and fame, not due to any sort of actual, principle.
Right. And if I recall correctly, I'm not 100% sure about this, but I believe, isn't Mark Burnett Australian just like Rupert Murdoch?
That I don't know.
I think he is. I'm going to look it up.
His Hollywood life and the ways in which he has lifted up people like Trump and Palin to try to create a portrait of them as if they are reasonable leaders, when in fact their actual track record is one of failure and of, you know, unreasonableness. And being ignorant.
Yeah, no, he is from, yep, Sydney, South New Wales, Australia.
Huh, what's happening with Australia there, Nicole?
I don't know, but yeah, I believe that it looks like that's where he's from. So yeah, something about these authoritarian, you know, figures from Australia trying to do something with our media and politics. Yeah. Anyway, it's just an aside. It just occurred to me off here. So anyway, that wasn't the big story though this week. The big story happened today, and it's only we've been waiting. Well, I think it was February, if my memory serves, and I don't trust my memory right now on anything. But that we heard from that young woman who was the foreperson of the special grand jury in Fulton County, who Fani Willis had been presenting her election interference case to. And this woman went all over TV and was all giggly and stuff and hinted that there were many, many multiple people whom they recommended be indicted. And then Fani Willis said that, you know, an indictment was imminent. And then we waited, and then it was months. So from February to August, when she finally handed down the indictment of 19 defendants, Donald Trump and 18 others, and we still didn't get the report. Now, they recommended that the report from the special grand jury be released, but Fani Willis asked and the judge agreed that it should be held until the indictment was made public. And so the indictment was made public a couple of weeks ago. And now today we got the full report. And we learned that many of those unindicted co-conspirators that weren't one of the 19, well, there were 20 more. And it included some pretty hefty names on there, including a couple of, at the time, sitting senators, including Lindsey Graham, David Perdue, who was a sitting senator who was defeated, the sitting lieutenant governor of Georgia, another senatorial candidate from Georgia. I mean, a lot of Michael Flynn and others. So, Lisa, we knew it was coming. We heard last night that it was going to be released today. Were there any surprises in this report for you?
Well, it's certainly like the fact that David Perdue, there were 17 yes votes and 4 no votes for him to be indicted. That's a pretty substantial majority of people. On the other indictments, the 19 that went forward, those I think were all 20-1. So one holdout, perhaps one, you know, Republican like person who wouldn't set aside their partisan beliefs in order to actually fairly indict based on the evidence. But, you know, it is interesting to see the other names of people who should have been indicted. You could have been indicted, perhaps. I hope maybe someday will be indicted. And also, as you mentioned, that lieutenant governor of Georgia, who's been really he's also had some news lately or been in the news lately. But, you know, seeing names like Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue and Graham on there, you know, I mean, I think that's important for the public to know that there were substantial votes for them to be indicted. And I also think, you know, other names are, you know, are have already been indicted or well in the news, and right, yes, and rightly so. But you know, Lindsey Graham, who has who's, you know, sort of launched his career impeaching, voting to impeach Bill Clinton for lying about sex, and then pursuing him in the Senate trial to impeach him that failed, you know, has subsequently made a career in many ways of lying. It certainly was my observation when I was on the Senate Judiciary Committee staff. I was shocked to see how often Lindsey would mislead people with his claims. That's only grown over time. He had a sort of a brief couple of moments of truthfulness. First, when he initially opposed Donald Trump in the race for the president, and he spoke out quite strongly. And then either he was compromised or seduced. Or both, I suppose, is possible.
Probably.
Into basically being a bootlicker for Donald Trump. And then you had that second moment where he sort of, where he stood up right after the January 6th insurrection and that violent attack on our Capitol and our democracy, where he said this was too far. And then he, of course, immediately in the weeks subsequently weeks sort of went back to being subservient to Donald Trump and advancing Trump with, you know, without any apparent conscience about what Trump has done to our nation and his destruction and his actual documented record of lying, you know, to go from being the person who imagined an impeachment over lying to being sort of a guy who spends his days defending the most documented liar in the history of America in Donald Trump. Like that's an astonishing, tragic tale, which is Lindsey Graham's legacy now.
Oh, it is. And I went black. I have news clips. I'm not very organized with some things, but with my news sound, I am. And I went back to January 2021 and January 6th. And I've got a lot of clips here, including Matt Gaetz saying, Antifa was responsible for storming the Capitol and shit like that. But here's Lindsey Graham, if it wants to play.
Senator from South Carolina.
All right. I'm just going to cue in a bit because I think he was really drunk at this point. This is after they came back in. And
before he's not president, I can accept Wisconsin 4-3. Pennsylvania. It went to the second.
I can't find the part, but I wish I have it somewhere, but I wasn't prepared to play. But he's like, I've had it. I've had enough. I was there with him, but I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And I'm telling you, I like had tears in my eyes. I'm like, finally, if this is what it was going to take for these people to finally admit who this guy is, well, then maybe it's worth it. Then you had Mitch McConnell say,
there's no question. None. That President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it.
No question about it. And he goes on from there. We had those two on the floor as they're certifying the election after the insurrectionists are cleared from the building. And for Lindsey Graham to now go back to his sycophantic ass-licking ways, he's got to be compromised. And I don't know what could they possibly have on him that he's, you know, a closet queen. We know that. I don't what unless he's like spying for the Russians, which perhaps what could possibly be worth him standing up for this crook who tried to overturn a fair and free election.
I mean, it is mind-boggling. Perhaps someday history will reveal what motivated Graham to basically be so subservient to such deeply deceptive, troubling, traitorous person in Donald Trump. We don't know that now. It's all speculation, obviously, and there's lots of rumors afoot over the years. But the fact is that. I think for people who are in the Senate, people who have taken an oath to defend the Constitution from enemies, foreign or domestic, people who have a role in protecting our national security, who certainly understand what it means to treat secret or letter cleared documents, you know, highly secret documents or Five Eyes documents, for example, in the other indictment. The importance of those documents being kept secret for our national security, for the security of every person who lives in America, for the security of our troops, for the security of our, allies, people who have those positions of responsibility from a national security standpoint, or even generally as officers of our government who take an oath of office to defend the Constitution, for them to basically use their power to try to aid and abet Trump's effort to subvert our democracy, to destroy and nullify the results of American voters in order to keep such an unfit person in a position of power. It's genuinely appalling. It's certainly the worst thing in terms of political acts I've seen in my lifetime. I certainly wasn't around during the Civil War, right, when people were leaving the Union to support the secession and the war that resulted in the deaths of more than 500,000 Americans, including numerous hundreds of thousands of people defending the United States of America and defending our Constitution. But in my lifetime, in the 20th century and into the 21st century, this these acts by these just these politicians who are so willing to set aside their oath, their actual oath, in defense of a man who's utterly unworthy of such loyalty, a disloyal man himself,
right?
To give such loyalty to him, you know, it is genuinely appalling. And to do so, not just about January 6th, but also, you know, in regards to these other indictments, these are criminal indictments by our fellow citizens through the process of law, to ignore those, to try to discount those findings by those grand juries, and also to just have such grotesque disrespect for the Justice Department and the FBI, which is led by a Trump appointee in Chris Wray, to suggest that these institutions are fundamentally corrupt when the man who tried to corrupt them is the actual person who's facing these indictments, someone who Trump who tried to distort the Justice Department to serve his own personal and political agenda, his own enemies list, his own effort to subvert our election, and a man who, as I said, and as the evidence demonstrates, willfully took some of our nation's most important secrets with him, hid them, lied about them, directed his staff to hide them, directed his lawyers to be dishonest with investigators and wave them around to people not cleared. Who knows what else he's done with those documents or who else he shared them with. He's someone who is unworthy of any public trust, in my view.
Absolutely. And you've just verbalized my theory of opposite world, because they do all that and then turn around and accuse the Democrats of doing exactly what they're doing, of perpetuating a fraud on the American people, of stealing an election, of everything that they do. It's 100% projection. But the most mind-boggling, or one of, I can't qualify one as more than the other, if you look what this Republican Congress has done, they make Jim Jordan chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which is astounding. And he has been so brutal in his attacks on Fannie Wallace, the DA of Fulton County, Georgia, who brought this indictment against these 19 co-conspirators and did not charge the other 20 who the grand jury recommended she do, because I'm guessing she dotted her I's and crossed all her T's and had the case ready to go the day she filed the indictment. And that's why the indictments are imminent, took so long, because she was preparing her case so she could go to trial immediately. Do I have that right?
Well, I mean, possibly, I guess that's what we believe to be the case. But your mention of Jim Jordan, I mean, her takedown of him.
The letter. That's what I was going to bring up. So she sends this letter to him, and I will post it on the blog today where I post today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/9-8-23. That's how I always post the shows, by the date, so you can find them easily. But it's a 9-page scathing letter to Jim Jordan, basically saying, I could paraphrase it, but my language, you know how I talk. It basically, fuck you and the horse you rode in on. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. And here's 9 pages to put you in your place. I heard a little bit of criticism of her. Somebody, and I don't know who it was, one of the talking heads on Morning Joe this morning, said it's the kind of thing that maybe she should have written it and slept on it before she sent it out. I don't think so. I thought she said exactly what she needed to say to him.
Yeah, I mean, I just think I think that I don't think it was indecorous for her to send it. I think she was accurate in describing what this slippery politician in Jim Jordan is trying to do, his extraordinary efforts to intervene or interfere in a legitimate, well-documented state prosecution, and his actual lack of credentials. Had she talked about, you know, his history of actually failing to do anything about men who were sexually assaulted and abused by the
boys, you know, boys under his charge, yeah. College kids under his charge was at Ohio State University that he knew were being abused, and he looked the other way. I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been, you know, perhaps going too far in terms of like trying to drag in that history. I think that history is valid because it shows the lack of morality of Jim Jordan, in my personal view, his willingness to basically pursue his own power to the detriment of the lives of other human beings, even with knowledge of the harm that they were facing or had faced, and just his, you know, just absurd, just posturing. At these hearings, which he, like, it really is a travesty that a person like that is in charge of the Judiciary Committee of the United States House of Representatives. You know, it was appalling in the McCarthy days to have someone like McCarthy at the helm, who was a drunk and a liar and a person who smeared people. And somehow Jordan is like, it's hard to say that he's worse than McCarthy, but mm-hmm. He's terrible in a different way, just in the sense of his just abject lack of moral center and his willingness to misuse that role in order to serve not even an ideology. Can you hear that in the background, or is that just me?
Yeah, no, I can hear it, but it's okay. No worries.
I'll stop and I'll get that off the phone.
No, no problem.
I'll go back to you, Nicole, so I can close that call.
Oh, okay. So anyway, I'm pulling up another thing. There, you know, all of these issues. So Joe Walsh. Oh, I see. She had to get out of there and then come back. We have this awesome electronic video feedback. Let me get rid of that because it's really distracting. Once Lisa comes back, there she is. She's back. No worries.
The call. I apologize. My phone was on. It was a rookie mistake.
Oh, no problem. No problem at all. But yeah, I was thinking of, you know, Joe Walsh, not the guitar player, the politician, the former Republican who was such an ass when he was in Congress, who now tries to, you know, portray himself as, it's so funny. I'm looking for that Joe Walsh and it brings up the guitar player. I don't remember what he is, but he's this is a totally different, well, not a totally different subject. I wanted to ask Lisa Graves in your personal opinion about the whole 14th Amendment Section 3 part of the Constitution that says anybody, any elected official who participates in an insurrection shall not, I even have my little pocket constitution right here. It cannot, not only can't be president, can't run for president, cannot be on the ballot. Actually, John Bonifaz of Free Speech for People came on here many, many months ago, and they had already filed some lawsuits along those lines. They were pushing for this. And now, two, and I don't know their names, I'm sorry, very respected conservative judges, lawyers, conservative members of the legal community wrote a piece in a law journal basically saying the 14th Amendment does apply here and Donald Trump should be prohibited, according to the Constitution, from being on the ballot. Larry Lessig and Lawrence Tribe and who's the other one, the conservative?
Michael Luttig
came out together and wrote this piece for The Atlantic, basically saying what these other two very conservative legal minds said is true and are getting the ball rolling. Well, and then Joe Walsh says, stop it with the 14th Amendment stuff. Well, excuse me, if the Constitution is not to be followed, or if they want to pick and choose what they're going to follow in it, then is it worth the paper it's written on?
You know, I mean, that's a loaded question. I think it's worth the paper it's written on, although my version looks a little bit like this. But, you know, I really appreciated Professor Tribe and former Judge Luttig's discussion, and also John Bonifaz's efforts. I'm on the advisory board for John Bonifaz's group.
Oh, very cool. Free speech for people.
But, you know, the thing that I read when I read that Section 3, it doesn't require criminal eviction at all. It doesn't say that you're convicted of a crime of insurrection. It says if you have, you know, if they shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion or given aid and comfort to the enemies, they are barred from oath. And the only way to stop the bar, basically the bar in essence is on its face a bar. And the only way to remove the bar is for 2/3 of Congress, the House and the Senate, to remove the bar. I mean, to me, Like, that's not a question of, oh, has he been convicted of this? And you can only be barred if you're convicted. It's actually the opposite. If you have engaged in a insurrection, which not everyone is convicted of doing that. That's not a thing that necessarily requires conviction. You are physically engaged in it, or right. You're unleashing people to attack the Capitol to, you know, stop the functioning of our democracy and the counting of votes, which is subversion of our democracy. It's in my view, one of the definitions of insurrection. The only way that bar can be removed is if 2/3 of Congress removes it, not a judge.
Right. And so this thing where the states are filing suit to keep Trump off the ballot in those states, isn't that an unnecessary exercise? Because a discussion I heard of Lawrence Tribe and Judge Luttig was it's self-executing. It doesn't require the actions of any state or attorneys general to come to this conclusion. The fact is he participated. He cannot be on the ballot unless, as you said, Lisa, 2/3 of Congress said, never mind. We'll do away with that provision.
Yeah, I mean, it's not self-executing in the sense that someone has to remove him from the ballot or say you are not eligible, which is what a Secretary of State can do. They can do that, you know, based on their own statutes where, you know, someone didn't file the right paperwork on time.
Right.
You can be barred from being on the ballot if you didn't file on time. You can certainly be barred from being on the ballot if you participated in an insurrection. Those decisions are in the power in the hands of the election official in those states. To me, like, it's not that it wouldn't be litigated. You know, a person then could go to court and say, no, I should be allowed to be on the ballot. Like, this was improper because I didn't engage in an insurrection, or I didn't miss the deadline. Here's my timestamp, or I had the number of signature, whatever it is. I've made the filing fee. I had a valid check, you know, but that would be litigating after the decision to exclude someone from the ballot, which is in the hands of the authority. So to me, it's self-executing in the sense that it doesn't require a court to find you guilty criminally
right.
in order to bar you. That's not what the 14th Amendment says at all. If it had intended a conviction to be a requirement, it would have said so. And one of the ironies or, you know, just hypocrisies or great deceptions of our time is that these right wingers claim that they're, you know, strict constructionists. They just follow the plain language of the law. When in fact they're not. They're not rule of law judges, despite the rhetoric that they peddle, with Koch peddles or Leonard Leo peddles or the billionaire Charles Koch peddles. They're not. These are people who are chosen in order to change our rights, to limit our rights. But whenever really push comes to shove and they're asked to read the actual language of the Constitution, the plain language like that 14th Amendment, suddenly they're nowhere near their supposed original intent. They're nowhere near reading the actual language. They're inventing language. You know, when it comes to Trump himself, like my theory, as I think I've said to you before, Nicole, is that it's possible he's read 15 words in here. I give him 15, but I don't think he's ever read the Constitution that he swore an oath to uphold.
No, I don't
have
either.
Any confidence that he's read any part of it. You know, and some of his advisors have clearly elided it in many ways, or to the extent that they've read it, like Mr. Who they're calling Cheeseborough, but who pronounced his name Shebro. You know, they think that they can just overcome it by fiat, basically by unleashing the troops on the American citizens if they were to, you know, effectuate the coup that they were planning. And make no mistake, like insurrection is a, you know, $10 word. You know, it's a fancy word. But what was happening on January 6th was not just an insurrection. It was an attempted coup.
Yes, it was.
And our democracy. Yeah.
I fully agree. And I think, you know, by the media calling it a riot. No, it wasn't a riot. It was an attempted coup. It was an insurrection. They broke into the Capitol. You listen to them trying to, you know, right wing media and right wing politicians, again, trying to excuse. Oh, it was, you know, they were just protesting at the Capitol. Well,
bullshit.
That wasn't just protesting is standing outside peaceably holding a sign. It's not, you know, injuring. It's not attacking police. It's not throwing down barriers and breaking windows and climbing through windows when you're told that the building is off limits today. it's saying, oh, we can't go there because this was not just a riot. This was an insurrection. We watched with our jaws hanging open that day in real time as this was happening. And as Trump sat and did nothing and then said, we love you, you know,
right.
You know, no,
right.
The gaslighting is incredible. And the fact that they're all just going along with it is astounding. Well,
and it's more than doing nothing, right? Because it's him actually trying to commandeer the Secret Service to go down to the Capitol with the mob. It's him and his buddies conspiring in these meetings where Marjorie Taylor Greene, who wasn't even sworn in yet as a member of Congress, subsequently sought a pardon for her role in these meetings that were happening about their plans for January 6th. It's the memo that was at the ready for Trump to declare martial law, and basically the urging of these other people like Shabro or Cheesebro to say, you know, you can just basically order a do-over election, which is not part of the Constitution
no,
at all.
No.
And like we'd never have it had they done it. But the reality was this effort to set aside the will of the American people in Georgia and other states. I mean, these were, in my view, traitorous acts. These were acts that are fundamentally at odds with being a democracy. And it's not about, you know, necessarily filing litigation about, like, can you have absentee voting or something, you know, that was sort of disgusting to see at the time, to attack the ability of the people to cast their ballots in an unprecedented once in 100-year pandemic, deadly pandemic. But, you know, that was at least they went to court and tried to have that heard in court. And the court rejected them time and time and time again.
62 times. Right.
Yeah. And so this is not just having your chance to litigate an election issue like absentee ballots or the voting time extended for people who are in line already or something. This was an effort to use force and to use the power of the president to overturn an American election for the first time in history, and to do so in ways that were truly menacing for the lives of public servants, including police, the Capitol Police. That, you know, those speeches from the, you know, those speeches with the White House in the background near yep. the Washington Monument by Trump, by Eastman, by Giuliani, by Trump's son, others, like those were speeches that were calls for, you know, in Giuliani's words, trial by combat.
Yep.
You know, Trump's words, you've got to fight or you're going to lose your country.
That's right.
Him planning to go down there right to the Capitol as it was being invaded, like basically to walk in, to march in with his people. The efforts by some of those people who were, you know, former military or current military, to work in tandem to try to identify where people were, where yep. members of Congress were, including in particular Mike Pence.
Yep.
Just this week, the testimony of John Eastman, who's been testifying in the effort in California to disbar him, and I believe he's someone who should certainly be disbarred, should lose his law license given his behavior in this case. He refused to answer the question about whether one of their plans was to have doddering ancient Senator Grassley in the chair in the absence of Pence in order to set aside the election results and push, you know, claim there was controversy. You have someone like Ron Johnson, who hasn't been indicted, but was reelected with a bunch of dark money backing him in the last election cycle. Someone who was willing to aid and abet this effort to put fake electors, fraudulent electors, to inject that into the process in the United States Senate, you know, an absolute just violation of the norms there. You had people like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz willing to make just outrageous objections to the lawful decisions of the lawful authorities, Republican state elected officials in those states, in order to set aside the proper counting of those electoral ballots. You know, at every turn, what you had was an effort to subvert our democracy and actually destroy it. And did not just destroy it, like, not that there's a good reason to destroy it, but to destroy it for the lousiest reason ever, for
yes.
someone like Trump. Like, it is literally to this day mind-boggling.
It is astounding. By the way, we have some breaking news. I'm trusting the chat room that you guys have verified this, because I just checked my email. I didn't see it yet, but My listeners are on it. I screwed up yesterday. I was talking about the judge had rejected the bid of Sydney whatever her name is. And I'm sorry?
Sydney Powell?
Sydney Powell. And it was Ken Cheeseborough. I was saying Mark Meadows. I meant Cheeseborough, whatever his name is. Their motion to separate. I kept saying Mark Meadows. It was a brain fart yesterday. But what they're telling me is the judge just rejected Mark Meadows' bid to move his case to federal. So
right, because of that, in part, I'm sure, because of the Hatch Act, which is that these people who are acting as public officers are not supposed to be acting as electoral officers or electoral agents. And then to try to claim that your effort to defend this electoral agenda, this insurrectionist agenda, is somehow within your duties. It's super offensive.
It's duty.
I was going to say, Nicole, you mentioned something earlier about this poll.
The CNN poll?
Yeah, the CNN poll. And, you know, I looked at it just briefly, although I haven't looked at it in full, but I did look at you know, who it was. And I just would note for your audience, I'm sure they may know this, but, you know, Nate Silver, who runs the 538 site that's part that, you know, was initially part of the New York Times and, you know, still has these relationships. I'm not saying that I'm 100% in favor of all the polling or whatever that Nate Silver does, but one of the things that they've done is that they've rated the pollsters. So basically they rate them on their accuracy, and SSRS has an accuracy rating of a C+. So you know, I wouldn't hire a lawyer whose rating was C+, and I wouldn't hire a doctor whose rating was a C+, and I certainly wouldn't hire a pollster whose rating was C+. But more than that, I haven't had a chance to look at your numbers, but you said that the poll of, you know, more than 1,200 Americans included 391 Democrats or independent Democratic voters and 898 Republicans or Republican leaning independents, which would basically assert that the American population is 69% to 70% Republican or Republican leaning. I don't think that's valid at all. I mean, on the face of that, you know, most of the polling, which I do have concerns about the way some of these polls are constructed, but you know, most of the polling, you know, puts Dems at 36 to 40, Republicans at 36 to 40, independents, you know, somewhere in the 20% middle. It varies, you know, within realm. But no one in their right mind, especially after Trump lost the election by a popular vote and the electoral vote, and especially after the 2022 election, in which despite the completely trumped up spin by Republican pollsters that this was going to be a red wave in the midterm, the fact is it wasn't, and it was only due to sort of the gerrymandering of the House districts that we ended up with this narrowly split House. But the idea that any pollster with any credibility would conduct and distribute and publicize a poll in which they've counted that the American people are 69.6% Republican or Republican leaning, it's just so bad on the surface.
Horrible.
And
the thing is, CNN, I guess their name is on the poll, and I don't watch CNN these. I haven't watched CNN in months. But I'm watching the coverage of their coverage of this poll, and they've been relentless. Somebody actually did a montage, of all of their fear-mongering. Oh my God, Joe Biden's poll is so horrible, he can't win. What are you going to do, Democrats? What are you going to do? Like, stop it already. It's 14 months out from the election. Polls don't mean anything at this point. And especially, as you said, if it's rated C+, come on. Whoops. Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
We obviously, you and your listeners, in some ways, have been tracking the tumult over at CNN with the political partisan leadership, the changing of the people who are doing the reporting, but also this ridiculous mandate by the, you know, former leader Chris Light to, you know, try to claim that they've got to swing to the right to try to get market share from Fox. I mean, it's just such a stupid marketing plan, but also it is having a distorting effect on their coverage to have that sort of partisan right-wing leadership at the helm, or someone who's trying to put their thumb on the scale in that way, to try to sort of somehow you know, go back to their Lou Dobbs days, perhaps, or, you know, their Lou Dobbs adjacent days or something. The fact is that, you know, I've found, like I do with most outlets, whether it's newspapers or TV, there are people who I have confidence in, mm-hmm. you know, people who are reporters or journalists on the air versus, you know, outlets as a whole. But the fact is that CNN has trashed its own reputation with this change in leadership. Horribly. That's been stirred by its owners, basically. It's the funders who now dominate it.
And the guy who heads Discovery Inc., who's this major right winger. And so it's his ideology that's trickling down that we're now seeing play out like this. Right.
Yeah. And people, it's a black eye for CNN to rely on a C+ pollster and to rely on such a distorted poll. You know, that's too bad. It's too bad that they've done that. It's too bad for the people who will be misled by that. That's not to say that everything is rosy. I mean, you know, the economy is moving forward in lots of positive ways. Biden has advanced the most progressive agenda of any president in decades now, in numerous ways, and has been fighting for, you know, economic reforms that will help make people's lives better, like student loan reform and forgiveness, the health insurance expansion efforts, the other efforts to basically replace and repair our you know, damaged infrastructure, to expand our ability to enter the 21st century for real in terms of energy investments in alternative energy and more, to help try to mitigate the devastating climate changes that are totally manifest everywhere in the country. You know, but, you know, we also live in a society that has been not divided. It's being divided by these right wing outlets like Fox, like OAN, operations like Steve Bannon's, you know, War Room, other lie machines, you know, the way Facebook has been monetized to, you know, help peddle hate and, and lies, less so than Twitter.
Right. Shitter.
Under Elon Musk. But the fact is that we have a number of people in America who are being aggressively misled on a daily, if not hourly, basis by some of these right wing outlets that up is down, you know, blue is green, you know, truth is lie, lie is truth. And
everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
It's opposite world. You're describing it, but that's what it is.
Yeah, like as you say, Nicole, it's opposite world. And despite all this, despite all that, all those forces arrayed against them, you know, Biden won in 2020, and he won by a substantial margin and by millions of votes. You know, Democrats held the Senate. They, you know, expanded it in 2021 in those Georgia races. They held it, you know, held it still in 2022. There wasn't this sort of midterm, you know, bloodbath.
No. And let me say something else, because this is not stressed enough. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe it is the case. As it was in recent years, the Democrats got more votes. Democrats got many more, won the popular vote for the House, got many more votes for their candidates in House races than Republicans did. But because of gerrymandering, the Republicans control the House. If you counted votes, the Democrats would be firmly in control.
Right. And you can see that also in states like North Carolina and Wisconsin, where a Democrat can win statewide office, can win the governorship, because there's no maps. There's no maps other than the state map. But when the Republican legislatures draw those maps, they skew them. They crack and pack the vote. They utterly grossly distort the voting process so that they can have minority rule in our democracy. And in states that are red states, they're also doing that. They have grotesque supermajorities that are gerrymandered. Those states, you know, maybe they've got 45% Democrats, but they have only like 20% of the legislature. You know, they may not have a majority in like a state like Tennessee or something, but they have a substantial number of voters who are not being heard, who aren't really being represented. And then you have states like Alabama, where in defiance of a ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court and by other courts, they refuse to actually follow the letter of the law, the Voting Rights Act. And they're doing so defiantly, willfully, aggressively, in order to try to secure and maintain their domination of federal and state, you know, politics and policy and power. So I think we're at the top of the hour. Nicole,
we are. I know. And there's so much we didn't even get to. I mean, there's Alito, the Supreme Court Justice Alito, today rejecting calls to recuse himself from an upcoming case in which a lawyer involved also interviewed him for The Wall Street Journal, where he said things that they would not say in their hearings to be confirmed, because you can't. A judge or a possible Supreme Court justice can't possibly opine on what could come before them in a hearing as to whether or not they should be confirmed to the Supreme Court. But in a Wall Street Journal interview, sure, I'll say whatever I want. And then you got Brett Kavanaugh saying, yeah, we'll probably put in some kind of ethics controls over ourselves. Give me a break. These people lie. Oh, my God.
Next week, Nicole, it'd be lovely to catch up on that.
Let's do it. And there's even more. There's so much. And I wanted to also ask you about Elon Musk. Did he commit treason? This man who controls SpaceX saw that the military contracts with SpaceX, I guess, for satellite communications, and he saw that the SpaceX was going to be used for, I don't know, GPS to take out a Russian armada or something, and he stopped it. He cut it off. Helping the Russians?
I have to say it's a shocking revelation that's been reported. I haven't had a chance to look into it. Okay. And I wish I could stay on for longer.
Okay, you got to go. And I'm holding. So next time, you look into that, because this has me freaked out. I think he should be tried for treason, but, you know, what do I know? Lisa Graves.
It's very disturbing. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We will talk, and maybe next week before I go, but certainly if not, when I get to Arizona. Thank you, Lisa Graves. Bye-bye. Bye. Lisa Graves, everybody. Find her at on the shitters. She's still there, as am I, at the Lisa Graves. And do check out truenorthresearch.org, because they do such great work. And I purposely keep it separate from when Lisa is here, because when she's on, she is speaking in her capacity as a private citizen, not as the executive director of True North Research, because... for legal purposes, she's speaking in her own capacity as just a person. But she also does this amazing job at True North Research. So, you know, in your spare time, go to her website and check it out, because they're doing great work. She has been doing that kind of work for the 15 or so years that I've known her, and much beyond. But yeah, Elon Musk, did you not hear the story? Holy shit. Oh, and it's Friday, so I can't talk about it tomorrow. But next week, let me see if I can't find it really quick. All right. We're gone from Progressive Voices is over. All right. So let me bear with me. I know I think I have it up here. You know, I don't. There's so much. But Google it. Look at you listeners, your news junkies as well. Google Elon Musk, SpaceX, Ukraine. And shit, throw treason in there too, because I believe he committed treason. He aided and abetted the enemy. Or is it Starlink? Whatever. SpaceX, Starlink, I don't know. All I know is it's Elon Musk's company. And he said it looked like they were going to kill Russian children. And he shut down the satellite so that they couldn't use the communications capabilities of his satellite. And yes, he admitted to it. Musk is siding with Putin. Why is this man... why does he have any credibility with anybody? Oh, my God. And the judge also denied Mark Meadows' bid to prevent his arrest. We already saw his mugshot. He was already arrested. So, you know, good. Keep it going. Starlink is an internet provider owned by SpaceX. Whatever. Elon Musk had the capability and used it to prevent Ukraine from this attack on the Russians that would have severely hampered their invasion into Ukraine, or one of their incursions. It's just, it's insane. It's opposite world. And on that note, have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Next week, I will be here. I'll probably be just as scattered as I am now, or more so, because, you know, we're moving. I still have most of the house to pack up. I'm saving the studio for last so I can be here all next week. yeah, bear with me. Thank you for bearing with me. And I don't ask much. And if you noticed, I backed off the commercials because, frankly, they weren't working. And if you guys aren't going to, you know, patronize the advertisers, it doesn't do me any good to run their commercials. So I'm really not. But I really need you, if you can, if you can afford it and you enjoy this show, please chip in with some support. This move is taking like every cent got saved. So if you can spare anything and to support the work I'm doing, I'd appreciate it. NicoleSandler.com. Click on the donate button there. All right. Thank you very much. I'll see you Monday. Don't know what we're doing yet, but we'll figure it out by Monday. Don't we usually? All right. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.